Hi, and welcome along to Early Excellence's Head to Head podcast. It's great to have you here. I'm Sarah Carey, School Improvement Lead here at Early Excellence, and in these podcasts, I'll be connecting with real head teachers and school leaders. We'll be discussing hot topics in primary and early years education and sharing some real experiences. So keep listening to hear more about school inspections and impactful school improvement strategies. Hello, hello. It's time for this month's Head to Head podcast, and I'm really excited about my guest today. I heard this person speak at their MAT conference, and what she shared was really, really powerful, and you could absolutely just hear a pin drop in the room. So I did tentatively slide up and say, would you be involved in a podcast? And the answer was yes. So I am absolutely thrilled to be joined by Brogan Taylor, who is the EYFS lead at Summercoats Infant and Nursery School. Hello, how are you? Welcome along.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me along. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no, absolutely. As I say, I heard you speak and I spoke to people in the room after you kind of spoken, and what you shared was just really so insightful and really impactful. And I was already hoping that you'd say yes, but when lots of people in the room were saying how you said they found what you were sharing, absolutely wanted to get you on. So yeah, thank you so much for joining us. Twisted your arm and here we are. So now the main focus of today's episode is really to hear about your curriculum development journey. And I think it would be fair to say, having listened to you speak and having looked at that and explored things and talked to schools that have worked with you and are kind of exploring it themselves, that it really is kind of inclusive, inspirational and impactful. Not least because of all the hard work and research and thinking that you've done behind that, but actually when you wrap around your school context and hear about how it's working for your children, I think that really does reflect the kind of power of the work that you've been doing. So that's kind of a good place to start, really. I guess let's hear a little bit about your school context first, and then we'll hear a little bit about you, but I'm keen for everybody to hear about your school context first.
So our school sits in sort of central to North Derbyshire, and we serve a community who are facing significant challenges. So our pupil premium currently sits at 60, but it often rises as high as 75%. Mm-hmm. In one of our year one classes at the minute, it sits at 82%. Mm-hmm. We have three times the national average of pupils we send needs. Mm-hmm. And while our EAL numbers remain typically low at 4%, the level of need within our cohort is consistently high. So our mantra is, plan for the most vulnerable and we all succeed. Mm-hmm. So Summercoats currently ranks in the top 8% by parish nationally for deprivation. And for us, that context matters. It shapes our children's starting points, their lived experiences, their opportunities, and it shapes every decision that we make and have made within our curriculum that's meant we've got to where we are today, mm-hmm. making sure that every child succeeds.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's really, we talk a lot about when children join schools and settings, actually the experiences that they bring, and to coin your phrase, that lived experience that they've already had to the point of joining you. And I think it would be fair to say, you know, your children are not experience rich. And I don't just mean kind of out and about, you know, going and visits and going to the park, but kind of experience rich within the family home and those sorts of things. You know, there's a lot of challenges being faced and a lot of barriers there for you. You know, that level of kind of pupil premium is high, isn't it? And you're dealing with that and you're managing that, and that has been almost a constant sort of picture and feature of your school context. Similarly, I think lots of schools have a rising number of children with high level needs, and mm-hmm. kind of the level of need that's coming in below that as well. You know, inclusion is really, really important. From we know that, and we don't need Ofsted to tell us that. But of course, under the new framework, we know inclusion is featuring so, so highly within the toolkit. And it's got its own section, but it's woven through every other section. And of course, within that, they have the four categories. And it's not just about children with SAND. Yes, it is. Yes, it is those children who are looked after. Yes, it is those pupil premium children. But it's also those other children that are vulnerable, that have facing significant barriers, and for you that's a huge percentage of your school and your cohort as well. So So it's really important. You want to make that real difference. So, and I guess, would it be fair to say, given that their start points, how would you actually describe their start points when they come to you? What kind of phrasing are you saying? Are they below, just below, a bit below, significantly below?
So generally, the past sort of 3 years, we are having four cohorts of significantly below.
Yeah.
And I know using the X-Rec tool, it highlighted to us just quite how low the starting points are. Yeah. And that entail just shows how impactful your curriculum needs to be, because mm-hmm. there's no reason that anybody can't make it. Mm-hmm. And it is our tagline. If you plan for the most vulnerable, everybody succeeds. Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. that's the message that I'm trying to impart today through our 10 mm-hmm. steps to success. You know, people sat listening will say, well, I get 90% GRD every year, but that's great. But what about those 10% mm-hmm. who haven't made it? What comes next for them? And there's no reason that they can't succeed. It is about, like I say, plan for the most vulnerable and everybody succeeds.
Yeah, and that has absolutely underpinned your curriculum. So of course, kind of curriculum development's been a big part of lots of schools' kind of journey and focus, and people will be in different places with that. Some schools are overhauling, some schools are just refining, some schools are fine-tuning, some are kind of tweaking bits and bobs. But of course, as part of self-evaluation, really, and the reflection of, is our planned intent, is our curriculum doing what we plan for it to do? And it's looking at that and critiquing that, isn't it? But for you, actually starting your curriculum development journey kind of started in a different place, I think it would be fair to say, because it wasn't about a overhaul or a fine tune. Do you want to just share? People, listeners can't see you, but she's shaking her head and kind of smiling. So do you want to just tell us where you were and what was happening in terms of what was the stimulus for you really starting with this curriculum development?
So my journey began in EYFS at Summer Coates around 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. I'd come back off my second mat leave, and there was a chance to return to EYFS, and I felt that pull instantly. Mm-hmm. The school had climbed from special measures to requires improvement, but the truth was undeniable. There was still so much more work that needed to be done. Mm-hmm. So when I sat down with the reception teacher then, that reality hit hard, because there wasn't a curriculum, no progression, no clarity, no map, you know. And in that moment, amid the worry and the uncertainty, I actually realised something really powerful, that this wasn't a setback. This was an invitation. It was an absolute rare chance to rebuild everything from the ground up. So to be able to design something that was rooted in the reality of our children's lives, rather than a template created for somebody else's world. At Summer Coates, our children, they don't walk through the door as blank pages. They arrive full and overflowing, carrying stories that have begun long before the school's even in the minds. Mm. You know, like we said, they've got experiences that are heavy enough to silence them, lots of emotion and dreams that they can't articulate. They come from a world that many of us will never understand. Mm. But we need to honour that with dignity and action. Every year when we welcome that class of children who are starting significantly below, it's sobering and daunting. And it just proved to us exactly why that work matters. Mm. So we needed a curriculum that did more than fill gaps. It has to change futures. It needs to be built on high expectation and not low assumptions. A curriculum that didn't ask children to catch up, but lifted them high enough to see what's possible.
Yeah.
So we built one, essentially, you know, not a set of documents, not a tick list, but a promise to our children and their families and the community that we serve. And that's something that I want to share today. I want to share how that promise turned into a curriculum that gives children not only the knowledge in their hands, but power in their lives.
Yeah. And I think just listening to you, the values and the drive and the passion and the belief that you and the school has, but obviously you have spearheaded this and you have led this, it is palpable. And as I say, when we were sat in the room, we could feel, when you were talking about it, you can feel it. And just now, you know, those key phrases, you're not gap filling, actually, that they're coming with so little. And as you say, some of those very, very heavy experiences that silence them, it's a lot to kind of engage the children to be in a place of being ready to learn and making sure that it's meaningful for them, and then that they can connect to it and start to engage with that and begin that understanding. And whilst I'm sure it was extremely daunting, kind of that realisation of actually there isn't a curriculum. I mean, we don't necessarily advocate throw the baby out with the bathwater, but you weren't doing that because you didn't actually have
no baby or no bathwater.
Yeah, absolutely. So you were in quite a unique situation. But I think it kind of one of the things that I reflect on a lot when I'm listening to you talk is that sometimes when we're refining curriculums, we kind of keep things in the curriculum because, and I think when we're reviewing it or when we're looking at curriculum development, we actually have to start with what is it that our children need? What is it that we believe and where do we want to get them to? And not be looking at, well, we've always done that and that's quite nice and this does this. You kind of have to be really evaluative and critique it. And that can be quite difficult to do sometimes. But I suppose in your instance, as you say, you didn't have the baby or the bathwater. So you started from there. So actually you've worked through, and you've alluded to this, you've worked through kind of what you could call a 10-step process, steps to success. Mm-hmm. As part of that curriculum development journey. So it'd be really good if you could just start to kind of take us through for you that start point and step one and kind of through that journey, because I think it will be really helpful to hear, because as I say, listeners might not pick up the whole steps because they might have something in process, but I think what you will share and the thought processes behind will be really insightful. And then of course, at the end, we'll talk about the impact of what it's had for your children. So let's kick off with step one.
So step one for us in our curriculum design process, it's starting with what matters most, and that's got to be your why, and it's got to be your drivers. So before planning a single theme or choosing a single book, I think you need to ask yourself, what is it that our children need most? Mm-hmm. What kind of people do we want to send into the world? What do we value here in this community with these families? And for us at Summercoats, the answer just became really clear. Our children need language, they need hope, and they need to feel seen, heard, and believed in. So from this understanding came our three curriculum drivers. So we went for communication, aspiration, and inclusivity. You know, these aren't labels. They are the soul of the curriculum. Every story, every provision enhancement, every prompt, every question, every learning movement is designed with these drivers in mind, because we know that strong communication ensures that every child is seen, because every child deserves more and more challenge and more opportunity, because every child deserves to belong and every story counts. The journey is valued and visible. Mm-hmm. So these drivers weren't chosen by chance. They were chosen deliberately and shaped by deep knowledge of our children and the community that we serve. And they reflect real need, real strengths, and real ambition. You know, we've just alluded to it. You can't teach everything and we shouldn't try to. But our drivers help cut through the noise and stay focused on what really matters for our children at Summercoats. You know, they help you to prioritise what we teach, what we repeat, what we celebrate, and what we protect when time is tight. They ensure that the curriculum is bold, targeted, and powerfully aligned with the lived realities of our families. So my advice would be for step one for anyone, a meaningful curriculum does not begin with topics. It begins every time with purpose, with clarity, and with a strong why. So start with your values and let them guide every decision that you make.
Yeah, and that's a really, really strong message. We talk all the time about your vision and values. And when I'm doing strategic reviews, I'll often speak to kind of heads and then early years lead and say, what are your golden threads? Or what is it that you want to achieve by the end of EYFS? And sometimes those conversations become very shaped around academia and early learning goals. And I'm not saying that they're not important. They absolutely are. But it is cutting through the white noise to what really matters, that absolutely is what's through you as a stick of rock. And you've got those three threads that, as you've said, become your priority and actually help to clarify thinking as you move through your planning process, be that the whole curriculum planning process or actually your week by week kind of reflective planning that you're doing. You know, when we're presenting maybe, you know, enhancements, really thinking about, is this enhancement delivering on those three threads? Is it helping us pull towards what we have identified as being most important? And if it's not, does it earn its place or not? And it helps you to kind of really sharpen what you're doing, so everything is pulling in that one direction towards what you want to deliver on. So I think, yes, we talk about vision values all the time, but I think what you've exemplified there really clearly is the core of that. And it's not a long list of things. It's not lots and lots. Actually, it's fundamentally what's going to make a difference to your children in your context. And I think you've kind of exemplified that really, really well. Yep. So step one, fully agree. So let's move through. Keep going.
So step two. So once your drivers are in place in step one, we'll move through to step two. That's mapping the child's journey. So we're thinking from self to world and back again. Mm-hmm. So we start narrow, broaden out as the year progresses, and then narrow back in again. So we began by asking a fundamental question. What should a child experience across a year that helps them grow, not just academically, but emotionally, socially, and spiritually? And from this, we shaped six themes that follow a deep, research-driven progression that's grounded in the science of learning and how children build schema over time. Each theme is carefully chosen to reflect a natural development journey and to create powerful cognitive and emotional connections. So at current, our six themes, we start with once there were giants in term one. So that's about understanding my past and how I've changed. Into term two, we look at the invisible. So who am I and what community do I belong to? In term three, we move on to coming to England. So how do other people live and what makes us special? In term four, we look at Katie in London. So where do I live and what's my country's story? In term five, we start to narrow back in again and look at the tiny seed. So how do I look after the world that I live in? And in term six, we look at how to catch a star, which is who do I want to become? It's a journey, you know, from the personal to the global, from concrete to abstract, and from me to we. You know, children begin the year exploring their own baby photos, and by the end, they're imagining their impact on the world. It's not accidental. This is curriculum as transformation, and the science behind the design. So we know that learning is relational. Children understand new ideas through what they already know. So young children make sense of the world through themselves, their bodies, their families, memories, and lived experiences. And these form powerful cognitive anchors for new learning. So by starting with once there were giants, it's not just learning about growing up. It's a foundation for understanding identity and change, belonging, family structures, and personal narrative. Children can only understand the world's story once they understand their own, you know, and by following a journey-based curriculum, it creates coherence and not fragmentation. And I think it's something you see a lot in traditional curriculum, that they often jump from topic to topic with no conceptual through line. Our sequence creates a schema-based progression where each theme builds on what's come before, prepares for what comes next, and revisits earlier concepts with increasing depth and complexity. And that reflects how the brain learns through connection, retrieval, and growth. In essence, step two, your curriculum, it shouldn't be a collection of topics. It needs to be a carefully designed narrative that takes children from self-awareness to global understanding and back to personal agency. It needs to be coherent, developmental, meaningful, and transformative.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, what you're talking about is steeped in research around what we know about how young children learn, what we know about that learning process. And again, you know, we know that Ofsted for a long time now I've talked about a cumulative curriculum, but that isn't just their thought process. It's because actually knowledge doesn't happen in isolation. It needs to be connected. For children to be able to embed learning, they need to go through a practice and rehearsal. They need to have opportunities to have repeated discussions, repeated experiences, to revisit. When they're coming to new learning, that learning needs to stick to something that they already know. And it's interesting because you're still using themes, but actually, rather than how I would describe it is, rather than running them, although you've talked about it, term one, term two, term three, term four, term five, term six, so it sounds like they are vertically, this is what we're doing. Actually, they are running horizontally through the year, because you're talking about me and my family, and then it's broadening it out. And again, it's really hard for children to kind of understand something that they've never experienced, because how can they hook in and connect to that? So that sequence is building them to that point. And I think actually it's really interesting how you choose to narrow it back down to them towards the end of the year, because it's absolutely right to take it from them and go broader, but then narrowing it back to them brings it back to, so almost what have we learned and how is that going to shape me? And I think that's kind of really powerful. And through the themes that you've talked about, you can absolutely see really clearly your three drivers really threading through there, particularly that aspiration which for your context is hugely, hugely important. So yeah, really, really interesting. Okay, so on to step three then. We've got this.
So step three for us in our journey was key texts as vessels of knowledge. So embedding understanding through story. So for us, key texts, they're not just stories. They're carefully curated tools for unlocking core knowledge and building understanding right across the curriculum. So each book has been chosen to align with and deepen the knowledge that children are expected to acquire. These are rich narrative anchors through which children build, revisit, and deepen their understanding of the world. The story becomes the medium through which learning is made memorable, meaningful, and developmentally attuned. In turn, one, like I said, we explored Once There Were Giants, and it's that anchor that allows children to explore their own personal history and development milestones. And it aligns directly with the early learning goal expectations. Because it begins with what children know best, which is themselves, it matches early cognitive development. The self is the first stable schema through which new knowledge is organised. And it's, again, linking back to that journey. So we move into term two when we read the text, The Invisible. We begin to look at emotional literacy while also introducing themes of diversity and community, which is directly linking back to the early learning goals of cultural similarity and difference. And later in the year, when we look at coming to England, it supports learning about migration and belonging. While in term four, Katie in London brings geographical and historical knowledge to life by introducing landmarks, the capital city, the monarchy and democracy. As we're moving into term five, the tiny seed allows for rich discussion about seasonal change and growth and environmental care, directly mapping back onto natural world objectives. And finally, with How to Catch a Star, it encourages that thinking about ambition and self-belief. You know, but these aren't just six texts that our year centres around. Supplementary texts act as mirrors, windows and doorways, reinforcing, reflecting and expanding the key knowledge through multiple perspectives, you know, ensuring full coverage of the early learning goals and our trust progression framework. And also given the foundational concepts needed for key stage one readiness. We know that young children learn best when new ideas connect to what they already know. Stories provide the perfect bridge for that. That narrative gives structure, context, and emotional resonance, qualities that support how the early years brain encodes, stores, and retrieves information. So in other words, the story, it's not just an addition to learning. It's a design principle that enhances retrieval, schema building, and long-term understanding. So by grounding early learning in familiar concepts and texts, it strengthens their sense of self.
And again, you know, it's not uncommon to hear, you know, lots of schools will have key texts that they use. But again, thinking about your curriculum design, you can really hear and feel the depth of thought that's gone into those topics and gone into those kind of texts that you've chosen. And, you know, you mentioned several times early learning goals, but, you know, I'm kind of thinking programmes of study. You can hear the programmes of study. And I think sometimes there is that worry of, oh, but I've got to, it's about curriculum coverage and we do these sorts of themes so that we can be sure that we've taught the curriculum. But of course, coverage and learning are two different things. And actually, in terms of what you're talking about, those key texts are there to really enable and support and introduce that learning to the children. And it's quite holistic, it's interconnected, and lots of things in early years are interconnected, but it's having the confidence to know that, you know, those connections within those texts are strong connections. They're not tenuous links. They are really strong, and that you as a staff team are clear in your mind the key objectives, the key learning opportunities that link to the EYFS statutory framework that are going to come out of that, whilst delivering on your, you know, your golden threads, as we're calling them as well. And I think, you know, when we were talking about this, you talked about those books, those key texts that you've identified last the whole half term. It's not a couple of weeks and then onto something else. So it is about that depth of discovery, and almost the children becoming, I suppose, experts in those texts and the conversations around those texts. And it gives you time. We always talk about time being so important for children to have time, uninterrupted time to engage in things, have time to revisit, to discuss, time to become immersed. And actually, by having that key text for the whole of your half term, actually, your children are having time to become fully immersed in that. Equally, you've said there are other texts as well, but they are kind of supplementary. And again, they've not been just kind of selected. They've been handpicked in terms of how, and I really like the phrase that you use around the windows to other opportunities. And I'm sure those things connect together. So you're building that kind of love of reading and interest of reading and opening up, you know, lots of story language, lots of narratives, lots of information. But at the crux of it, you've got that main driving text that the children can absolutely become immersed in, and the staff too. And, you know, not saying this is something that schools all have to do, you know, have a text for a whole term, but for your school and your children, it's working really, really well and enabling them to really dig in and start to make those strong connections. And actually what you're doing is building brains and supporting the neurological pathways to develop because of the time and the depth in terms of what you're offering. So, yeah, I think, you know, that's really interesting. Just, I think, for people to reflect on sometimes how quickly we do pace through books, even if they're identified as our core books. Sometimes we perhaps do pace through them quite quickly. Yeah, no, that's really, really insightful. Okay, so let's keep going on our journey.
So we've looked at drivers in step one. But for us in step four, we look at golden threads. So weaving in the threads that hold the day-to-day practice together. So that's the golden. So like we've said lots, your curriculum isn't defined by the topics you choose. It's defined by the golden threads that run through them all. Mm. So your plan is only as strong as your threads. The ideas, values, and areas of learning that stay constant, no matter what the term, the theme, or the text. These are the heartbeat of provision. Mm. They're what create coherence, purpose, and identity. For us at Summercoats, our golden threads are clear and they're uncompromising. So we've picked personal and social and emotional development and understanding the world, which then ties back to the drivers as well. They aren't just subjects on a timetable or part of the early learning goals. They're the two pillars our children need more than anything else because of the lives they walk into school already carrying. Mm. So PSED runs through every single moment of our day. Our children need emotional safety before they need phonics. Mm. And that's something we'll get to a little bit later on as well. But they need connection before they need comprehension, and they need regulation before readiness. So PSED, it's not a lesson. It's a way of being.
Yeah.
It threads through routines and interactions, language, play, conflict resolution, and relationships. Understanding the world is our second golden thread, because for many children, the world they know is painfully small, and our role is to widen it, to open doors that they didn't know existed, to give them language for concepts they've never seen and spaces they've never visited and possibilities they've never imagined. Understanding the world becomes the spark that expands their thinking, their vocab, and their sense of place in the world. So when your golden threads are clear, and everything else aligns. So when them golden threads are secure, your enhancements, they make sense. Your environment's got purpose, your planning, it becomes far more consistent. And your curriculum, it gains the strength of rope. It's not a collection of loose strands. So for me, my advice for step four, know your golden threads, your day-to-day operational threads, name them and absolutely protect them. And make sure they run deeper than your topics. They are your everyday being.
Yeah, yeah. You know, hearing your thought processes, I think, is absolutely invaluable. But I also think you have absolute clarity. So in this conversation, I flitted between the term drivers and golden threads. But actually, for you, you've been really clear. Your drivers are those kind of three strands that we identified in step one. And your golden threads is this part. And again, it's linked to the curriculum, but it is what's going to make the difference to your children. And actually having this clarity makes it easier for you as a staff team to teach, because you know the direction of travel, you know the trajectory, you know what your priorities are in terms of your drivers and in terms of your golden threads. And again, it reflects back to what I said earlier about it helps you to then see the things that you're presenting as learning opportunities inside, outside, at any point in the year. Is this earning its place based on helping us to deliver our golden threads and our drivers? And if not, why are we having it here and having that professional conversation? Do we need it? Well, we might need it, but equally we might not. So it helps that clarity for staff, but also efficiency. It's time. Your time is precious, but your time for planning and preparation is well spent. And the time that the children have in the learning environments is well spent, because everything is really, really carefully curated and crafted towards your key drivers and your golden threads. Yeah, it's really powerful, really powerful.
So step five, and it's one that really, really resonates with me. So it pains me when people don't do it. Plan for progression in your core areas first, because you'll never get to maths and English if you don't. Progression's not, it isn't a ladder. It's a growth in awareness. So when we talk about progression in early years, we need to stop thinking of that ladder. Children don't climb learning step by step. They grow into it. Progression's not linear. It's a deepening of awareness, capability and identity. And that's why every strong curriculum needs a conceptual spine, a clear rationale that holds everything together so you know what you're focusing on and when. It tells us what matters most for our children in our community, own at what time in the year we're focusing on that. And it ensures that every choice, every book, every theme and every conversation aligns with the bigger purpose. So across the year, the conceptual spine guides children to grow in five essential ways at Summercote. So it's their understanding of self, their ability to communicate ideas and feelings, their grasp of community, diversity, time and change, the physical confidence and skills to participate and to be, and their mindset in the belief that they can learn, try, fail, and keep trying again and building resilience. Mm-hmm. You know, these aren't extras. They are the absolute foundations upon which phonics and maths and every future success rests on.
Mm-hmm.
And when that spine holds, and because the spine holds the shape of the year, learning becomes connected, deliberate, and meaningful. A child who understands how they've changed can now think about how London's changed over time. Or a child who can say, I'm a good friend, is now ready to ask, what kind of citizen do I want to be? And this is the power of a curriculum that's designed as a journey from self to community to world and back again, because it expands, deepens, and then circles back. And it naturally matches the way that children make meaning. And this is where true progression happens. But you need to focus on them core areas first and ensure that they're solid. So, you know, being blunt with the truth, if the foundations aren't there, phonics will not land and maths will not land. You need to build learners who are ready, not just academically, emotionally, socially and spiritually. You know, and that's the progression that matters, and that's the progression that sticks, and that's the progression that changes the trajectory of a life.
Absolutely. And you know, just listening to that in terms of, you know, when we're delivering training and doing consultancy, we always talk about the prime areas of learning being prime for a reason, not only because they're time sensitive and the brain sensitivity is kind of reducing over time to kind of be kind of receptive as it is, as the children kind of become older, but also they support the children in the here and now, but also support their future success as well. And you've just listed within your kind of spine of your curriculum the prime areas and the characteristics of effective learning. In simple terms, in simple money, that is what you're talking about. So again, you know, that absolutely kind of resonates. And you know, we're not saying you don't start. You do look at early phonics, you do look at early maths, you are looking at early reading. Of course you are doing that. But again, it's back to, are you spotlighting the right things at the right time while spinning all of those plates? Are you spotlighting and magnifying the right things so that the children are as best placed as possible by the end of their reception year, ready for the kind of the next phase in learning? Because again, back to that brain sensitivity, we know for kind of number, for example, that the brain continues to be really receptive to kind of learning number and concepts well into key stage one, whereas the brain is far less receptive to language and communication by the age of 4.5. You know, the window is really, really kind of narrowed, and there's still scope for it, but it's not as easy. So again, I think what really resonates with me here as well is that you're basing it on what we know about child development as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, really important. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you. So we're into step six, so we're nearly there. So, and it's another one, it's something that I'm really passionate about, and that's stage one readiness does not mean making mini robots. It means connection. So let's be clear, the early years foundation stage is not about turning 4 and 5 year olds into mini year one pupils. Mm. It's about helping them feel ready emotionally, socially, and developmentally for what comes next. So yeah. Readiness is not about formal sitting at desks. It's about feeling secure, confident, and connected. Mm. And, you know, we know that change is hard for children. So we don't leave transition activities until the last week in July. Mm. We build them into the curriculum all year long. Yeah. You know, reception children, they'll visit the future classrooms, and key stage one teachers, they come to reception ready to build those relationships early on in the year. Children share playtimes, they plant flowers with the future classmates, they walk the corridors that soon will become familiar.
Mm.
But it's not just about physical spaces, it's about relationships and belonging.
Absolutely. You know,
we open our doors wider. We want everybody to feel ready for that next step. So we have afternoon teas with families, send letters to other schools, food bank pledges and collections. But this isn't an add-on, it's curriculum as connection.
Yeah.
Because if we want children to believe that they belong and believe that they feel ready for Key Stage 1, they've really got to feel it. And that's what readiness for me really looks like. Mm. We're not chaining our 4 and 5 year olds to desks to complete endless worksheets and everybody creating the same picture. It's about feeling ready and feeling ready for that next step and feeling connected.
And again, you know, transition isn't an event. It should be part of the journey. Our EYFS children should be part of the whole school, not kind of like, you know, this, it's where they are, can engage with things in the whole school. And it's about them being ready as a whole child, which I think is kind of what you're articulating. But again, what really comes through really powerfully in what you're talking about is you have absolute clarity in what you believe in your school transition is about. And it's not about getting them ready for you. It's not about getting them ready to sit at a table and chair and follow more formal structured teaching. For you, actually, it's about them being prepared as a whole child, having the confidence, having the resilience, knowing their place in the class, in the school, in the community, and being part of that. And actually, by kind of supporting the children in that way, they're probably better placed to face whatever comes their way rather than being prepared in very specific things. Actually, you're preparing them, you're giving them life skills, actually. You're preparing them for kind of life and those sorts of things, not just, actually, we're preparing you so that you're going to go in there and learn in a different way in that classroom, potentially. It's the life skills that you're starting to build, which, again, you have that real clear understanding. And I'm sure you've had lots of discussions with your leadership team and with your Key Stage 1 receiving team and with your early years team as well about what these things mean. And I know for yourself, you've read widely, you've done lots of research, and you have your own clear ideas. But this isn't just the Brogan Show necessarily. This is, you know, this is a summer coats agreement, isn't it, in terms of, yeah, from your leadership team, from your Key Stage 1 team, from your early years team, in terms of this is what we mean by, and you know, we talk about having a clear understanding of this is what we mean by continuous provision, this is what we mean by enhanced provision, this is what we mean by outdoor learning. But you are at that much deeper level of this is what we mean by transition. And again, yeah, really, really insightful and thought-provoking, I think I would say.
I think it definitely, it pulls through in the data. So it's not all about numbers, but all but one of our children from the vast majority met GRD last year. Yeah. So people get that sort of internal panic thinking that they need to be ready to sit and engage in Key Stage 1 and, you know, be sat at a table smartly and ready. That's not what the early years stage is about. Mm-hmm. And if you follow that rationale, that conceptual spine, your children naturally get there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's mm-hmm. the bigger picture and leaving nothing to chance.
But look at you just tossing that in there. I'm just going to repeat that in case listeners didn't hear it. So at the start of the episode, you talked about your children's context and that all of your children, all of your cohort, mm-hmm. come in significantly below. And what you've just tossed out there in the middle of that conversation is that all bar A handful? Not even a handful. All bar one last academic year reached their early learning goal. How powerful and how impactful your curriculum has been, and the hard work of the staff team in kind of delivering that, sticking to that, you know, that and achieving that. And what I would say is, from a statutory point of view, the early learning goals and the end of year profile is to support transition to year one. It's not actually about kind of numerical data as such. It is about being able to sit down with those year one staff coming to visit your children in early years and seeing them and understanding the provision and the practice. And knowing what those children's strengths are and next steps in learning. Where the children are in relation to the early learning goals is what should shape your transition conversations that you will have whilst feeding in what we know about their characteristics of effective learning and how they are as whole children. But to go from significantly below to all bar one child, and I do know for that particular child, you know, there were other barriers that, as with lots of things outside of our control with regard to attendance and those sorts of things. But from what I understand around that child, they weren't far off, if that makes sense. So they were still really well placed.
In terms of the prime areas, he was absolutely there. It was just writing that we just didn't quite make it. But you know, he's gone on and he's transitioned really well into Key Stage One because we followed that conceptual spine without chaining them all to tables and chairs. It's just not necessary.
Yeah. And again, you like you say, your staff and your children are facing significant challenges. You know, your staff are having to work really hard to support the children with those barriers and to help them work through lots of experiences and those sorts of things. And still those children are being nurtured and facilitated and taught well with a really rich curriculum that's so well thought through and so well tailored to the context that it is enabling them to succeed. And I think that's just, you know, pausing for that on a moment in terms of their start points and their end points. And as you say, even for those children, and in this instance, we're talking about a child, but I know in previous years it's been kind of a handful, but they're as well placed as possible to go on to visit the next place space in their journey. Okay, so let's crack on. Right.
So step seven, it's about having hooks and exhibits to anchor all those experiences and make learning stick. Mm-hmm. So at Summercoats, each term includes a hook and a celebration. Mm-hmm. And it could be something as small as a baby photo gallery or a royal tea party, sending a letter to our partner school in the post, a sunflower sent home to grow. And these moments are really small. They're not forgettable. Yeah. Because we know that children may not remember every fact that we teach, but they remember how learning felt. Yeah. And we know that emotion, novelty and connection are the three strongest drivers of memory formation in early childhood. You know, some celebrations, they harness all three. And that's why they're not just extras. They're an essential design feature of a curriculum that sticks. Hooks build schema. A hook doesn't just excite children, it activates prior knowledge and prepares the brain to receive new information. Hooks and celebrations, they support schema building, reducing cognitive load, retrieval strength, oracy and communication, and that motivation and perseverance. These events, they help children organize new concepts into their existing framework.
Yeah.
So when information fits a schema, retrieval becomes easier, the learning becomes stickier, and children's understanding becomes deeper.
Mm.
You know, the exhibits, they make learning meaningful. The celebrations at the end of each term serve a different purpose. They solidify learning by giving it an audience, a purpose, and a moment of pride. That celebration says to our children, you did it, and you mattered, and look what you've made. And that's absolutely crucial for developing confidence, agency, motivation, and that positive learner identity. When children are sharing their work and explaining their ideas or taking part in that accumulating experience, they're strengthening everything, the linguistic skills, the social skills, the metacognitive skills, and they're all foundations for later successes in English and maths. And these moments really need to protect them as early years staff. They're not just nice to have moments. They can't be squeezed out when the timetable gets tight. For me, they are the glue that makes the curriculum coherent, memorable, but also human. So for me, my advice would be on step seven, make space for these moments and build them in and fight for them even when your timetable's tight.
Yeah. And, you know, what you're talking about is that the hooks are kind of helping the children to assimilate what they know. You're helping them to join the dots, as it were, because that's not easy for young children to do. And it's still part of, you know, we're building brains, it's supporting that architecture of the brain, isn't it? But what I find interesting listening to you there, you're talking about providing experiences and hooks. And they're not all, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but they're not all singing and dancing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's actually, these are going to make a difference. They're going to be meaningful. They're going to be memorable. And it's funny, I was delivering some training yesterday to a mat, and I was working with the heads across the mat when we were looking at kind of vision and values. And I was talking about actually rich experiences. What does rich experiences mean to you? And does our mind ultimately go to kind of, you know, the big experiences and the trips out and those sorts of things, which do have their place, but actually on a more manageable day-to-day, more meaningful basis, that something's going to be threaded through the curriculum and not just be a one-off, so that you can hook your learning back into it. You can, as you say, stick more learning to it because it becomes more sticky. I think it's really interesting because, again, it's just about thought, provoking thought, isn't it, about how we see what we see as the key experiences. And lots of schools do plant a seed and send it home. But is that viewed as a rich experience? In your context and what you're talking about, it absolutely is. It's one of the kind of key features. But that might be happening in lots of schools, but it's not given the same sort of value and precedence. And thinking about kind of your end celebrations, that's coming back to, there's such a lot of language and communication in that, isn't there? Such a lot of the children developing, again, those characteristics of effective learning, but also that self-esteem and that I matter, what I've done is being valued. These people want to know, look at what I'm kind of bringing, look at what I'm contributing to the world. So again, your drivers that you identified in step one, you can feel those again kind of really pulling through into those opportunities.
It's something like acknowledged, like we've said, those moments, this small, don't forget them. And it doesn't cost anything to invite your parents in for a stay and play, or create a baby photo gallery, or send that sunflower home. But they are a rich part of our practice that we protect and make time for, because we know that helps learning stick and it just boosts that sense of self and learner identity.
And I think in terms of that, you protecting it as well, I think what's really clear is, if you're protecting it, you value it. And if you value it, it's not going to be rushed. It's not going to be a production line of plant your sunflower seed, put two scoops of that in, stick your finger in, put your seed in, cover it up, be a bit of water, off we go. Actually, if you are protecting it because you value it, the expectation that you're putting through that learning opportunity will be even stronger as well, I would imagine. So the experience itself is rich in terms of the discussion, the experience, the connections that are being made. It's not just about getting the job done. It's not a production line, is what we're saying.
Absolutely. So we're on to step eight, and it's something we spoke about earlier in our, you know, earlier in our conversation, but it's the progression within each term. So deepening knowledge over time, whether it's that vertical and horizontal progression. So at Summercoats, each half term is built around a core inquiry or concept, and it's introduced through a powerful key text. New knowledge is offered simply and clearly at the start, then layered and revisited and enriched as the weeks progress through the term. And that's always through play, talk, outdoor learning, reading, and meaningful interactions, never ever through formal input for us. And that mirrors how young children learn through repetition, connection, and exploration across multiple modalities. Knowledge for us isn't just dropped after one unit, it's re-encountered in richer ways across time, in that relentless cycle of teach, retrieve, apply and build. You know, ideas such as identity, community, journeys and change, they're introduced early in the year and deliberately revisited later on with greater complexity. This is intentional conceptual mapping. The curriculum repeatedly returns to the same big ideas so that children build robust, flexible schema rather than encountering key knowledge in isolation.
Yeah.
And knowledge and progression, they're not just mapped vertically, it's horizontally as well. But knowledge develops within the term and concepts are introduced, explored and revisited, and we apply them again in richer contexts. So vertical progression, that's the same concept reappearing across the year in more sophisticated ways and building that idea throughout the half term and connecting new knowledge, making it something meaningful and familiar.
Yeah.
So this dual edge structure, it ensures that the curriculum feels coherent and not fragmented. This curriculum design, it strengthens retrieval because ideas are revisited so frequently, but in various contexts that they can't be forgotten. That retrieval becomes a natural part of the day, whether it's, you know, throughout the half term or across the year, we're building something and taking it and building it some more. Mm. And that little and often approach, it aligns with cognitive science. So we know that the more frequently and purposefully children retrieve information, the stickier that information becomes. Mm. When they're encountering these ideas repeatedly, each time with new vocabulary, more understanding, and a greater ability to explain and represent, it makes that learning stick. Mm. We make sure the application is meaningful and that new layers of knowledge, you know, they make that learning transformational. Mm. And it's design that creates coherence and long-term mastery just by revisiting concepts and texts in richer ways each time as their understanding becomes more. Mm. And this isn't accidental. It's a product of thoughtful curriculum design and that's based on cognitive science and child development.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like you say, we touched on it earlier, didn't we? But it is those opportunities. When you look at your curriculum, when I'm doing strategic views or if we're doing kind of curriculum development work or curriculum review, we'll kind of pick up on a key concept that's perhaps been taught and then track where that is revisited through the child's journey. And sometimes we will find that it is revisited, you know, it's perhaps introduced in nursery and it's perhaps revisited in reception and then again in year one. But actually that's quite far spread apart. And you talked earlier about kind of strings becoming ropes, and it's those neurological pathways, isn't it? You know, the more opportunities they have to kind of revisit and go deeper, the stronger those neurological pathways will be in the child's brain, the more likely then it is to become embedded learning and to be able to have new learning stuck to it. But I think sometimes, again, there's perhaps sometimes concepts introduced that are then never really touched again at any point, which then poses the question, so why have we decided to teach that? An example that I come across sometimes is, you know, people who schools that use a wonderful text, Whatever Next, which is, you know, a lovely text. I know it's probably one that you use as part of your love of reading, kind of not one of your core texts, but you know, it brings lots of talk and excitement and you know, there's lots of rich language opportunities within that. But off the back of that, you absolutely do not need to then learn about and name the planets and the sequence of the planets. But often when I see that key text of Whatever Next, the role play area gets changed to the moon, which is really difficult then because adults have never been, children have never been. So everybody has to work really hard to use it properly. Do we actually know what to do on the moon? No, even for us as adults, that's hard, let alone for children. So it's not making it as easy as possible. And also then, as I say, this work around planets, and you know, some children might be interested in that, but if you then look at where are they going to use that knowledge of planets in the future and how is that woven into the onward curriculum? So I do think of what you're talking about in terms of that we revisit these things and we add more to it, so that you use the term mastery, I use the term earlier kind of experts, it's the same sort of thing, isn't it? Where really reflecting when you're critiquing your curriculum as to, so where will they revisit this, build it? Is that space of time an appropriate space of time, or will it be kind of forgotten? And working those things through, and really then thinking, when will they revisit it? And is this the right concept that we need to be keeping revisiting or not? And I think what you're saying in what you're doing is it's really well thought through in terms of that concept development and that how that will build over time and inform future learning as well as learning through your early years.
We're into step nine, so we're nearly there. So step nine for us, it's thinking about those early learning goals and that trust progression, but ensuring that it's built in and not bolted on. So every planned outcome is directly mapped back to the early learning goals and our trust progression framework. But rather than treating the early learning goals as a final tick list, we position them as destination points. Mm-hmm. So each theme, each text, experience and interaction is deliberately designed to move children closer to these endpoints in ways that are developmentally appropriate, meaningful and coherent. This mapping, it's not just confined to knowledge or academic outcomes. it runs through everything that we do. Every strand links back to trust expectations, you know, to ensure that consistency, ambition, and a clear through line from nursery right the way through to year six. A curriculum where alignment is invisible, but it's intentional. From the outside, the curriculum, it feels playful and story rich and child centered, which it absolutely is. But beneath it, it sits a highly structured progression model where concepts are being spiraled, knowledge is sequenced, skills are built upon gradually and deliberately, and vocab is planned and revisited. And that assessment, it's embedded into daily practice. So to put simply, nothing is accidental, everything's intentional, and nothing is left to chance.
And that's how it should be in terms of, as I've said before, you know, it's about having that clarity and stripping out. So you can see the woods for the trees. You can absolutely, you and your staff teams can see the woods for the trees. They know the direction of travel. They know the trajectory. They know kind of the intentions in terms of your drivers, in terms of your golden threads. And, you know, we're not ignoring the EYFS statutory framework. We're not ignoring the early learning goals. But the early learning goals are not kind of the main driver. They're not what's shaping you. They are what you're mindful of in terms of getting the children to a point in time. And knowing that if the children reach that point in time, then they'll be kind of well-placed for the next journey or as close to that as possible. But to your point, and again, it's that how it threads through from early years through the school to Key Stage 1 and beyond that's vitally important. I often use the example of our visit nurseries and see children using, they've been explicitly taught how to use powder paints and how to mix those powder paints. And then into the next class, they kind of learn how to mix different colours using the powder paints. And I'll arrive in year four and it's an art lesson and the paper's there, the brush is by the side, the pre-ready-made paint is already squeezed out into the palettes. And so I kind of question, where is all that independence and knowledge and skill that have been developed and nurtured within early years? It's almost being stripped away because the curriculum has not been as well sequenced or has not been as well thought through, or there's not that understanding of, look how independent the children can be in terms of what they do and their thinking in early years and their ideas. Some of the things that they come up with it within the workshop area, within the construction area, or within the small and block play, you know, so many own ideas, own lines of inquiry, and the children don't have the opportunity to think in that way further through the school. So I think it's not just about the concepts, it's also thinking about the threads of the key attitudes and key behaviours as well, and those thinking, learning to learn skills, those thinking skills, how they are built upon further through the school in the school curriculum. Because as we say, early years children are often very independent, can follow their own lines of inquiry, will make choices about what they want to do, will talk about it, will actually find that what they've constructed isn't quite right, and then they'll refine it or have another go. And you know, that's they're really skillful things to be doing that we want to build on, not lose, as they move further through the school.
So we've made it to step 10. Step 10 at Summercoats, it's about broadening horizons through daily and weekly enrichment. Mm-hmm. And it's that straight line back to that driver again, back to that golden thread. It's what that looks like operationally on a day-to-day basis. We know that in the early years, enrichment isn't extra. It's absolutely essential.
Mm.
As we've been shaping our 2025 curriculum, we've been making sure that step 10 focuses on building a rich and meaningful offer that goes far beyond the basics. We want every child to experience a world full of possibility, where they're seen not just as learners, but as musicians and communicators and compassionate citizens. It links back to that driver. We are aspirational. Children deserve to explore their talents and discover new interests. So for us, that's why in early years, our children get the chance to have a daily guitar lesson. They get the chance to begin to explore sound and rhythm and music making. These experiences, they build confidence and coordination and a sense of achievement, even with the youngest learners. Linking back to that driver again, we are communicators. So we have daily Makaton sessions. Children develop another tool for communicating. It supports the development, their emotional expression and inclusion. So whether a child is speaking confidently or still finding their voice, it ensures that they can be connected and share and feel that and feel and belong. And linking back to the last driver about being inclusive and being respectful, you know, we believe that children, they're never too young to understand the power of kindness. So as part of our enrichment offer, children take part in a charity donation where they collect food for the food bank. And they walk their donations to the church with absolute pride and real purpose in what they're doing. And that's given them an understanding of empathy, responsibility and community at 4 years old. Mm. And they walk there with such pride in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, these are carefully planned enrichment opportunities.
Mm.
They help develop a stronger sense of self, others and the wider world. And they provide meaningful and memorable experiences that will stay with them far beyond when they leave us.
Mm.
You know, that guitar can build confidence. Signing, it gives that child a voice. And that donation, it teaches compassion. And that's why we finish on enrichment step 10, because it lights the way and it offers so much.
Yeah, it's so thought-provoking. And again, hearing you talk, it's about the high value that you place on those things. It's knowing you have, there's a real depth of understanding in the why behind those learning opportunities. And again, you know, I know we delivered, when I was at school, we delivered to the food banks, but it sometimes became a bit of, oh gosh, we've got to do that. And then we've got to do the risk assessment. And it became something, sometimes wrongly, something to get through rather than something to organise rather than something to really value and to really kind of help shape those children. And we know those intentions are there, but it's about making the most of them. And again, because you are so clear on your drivers and your golden threads, you can really see the power of those opportunities, and you're maximizing them, making the most of them for your children, and connecting it all the time back to that learning, that experience, that adult interaction, the conversations that you'll be having about those experiences. It is kind of building all the time to make sure that you are delivering on what you're setting out as your intent in terms of your drivers and your golden threads. Wow, step 10 steps. And there you are, you've kind of got everything sussed. But no, I think it's been really, really kind of insightful to hear. And you've been so immersed in the journey. It's a clear for you, it's been a clear step-by-step process. And as I say, this isn't about saying to listeners, this is what you must do. And it's not about saying throw the baby out with the bathwater, as we said. You were in a unique situation where you were literally starting from scratch. And this has been a four-year journey. And you will still be refining things. You'll still be shaping things on the cohort that comes thing. But you've absolutely lived and breathed it. And I think you can tell you've also done lots of research. You've also drawn on your professional knowledge, and you've had those professional conversations to get that shared vision. And most importantly, it's having impact for your children, and it's delivering on your drivers. So that evaluation of is it doing what we wanted it to do? The answer is absolutely yes, in terms of the experiences and the journey for the children. But then on a kind of a cruder point of view, it's working from a data point of view, isn't it? In terms of you can see that. So I know we've talked a lot, but before we kind of put it to a close, so you've mentioned throughout a few bits of kind of my tip for this would be, but it'd be just good to kind of hear a summary of kind of any top tips that you do have, or any key messages that's just to kind of summarize before we finish the session.
I know that when you're in that position where you're starting again, or you've got adaptations to make, it can feel really daunting. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it's just knowing where to start. But I've got my two takeaways from our journey. That first piece of advice would be protect your plan, but also let it breathe. You know, your curriculum's a map, but it's not a straitjacket. You need to let it breathe. Adapt it to your children and your year and your changing world, but you really need to protect it. Because in times of pressure and in a world of quick fixes and, you know, topic boxes and being chained to a table, creating 30-some file pictures that all look the same, you really need to hold firm. Remind yourself that it's your job not just to fill heads, but to ignite hearts. You know, we want to ask questions and we want to equip children for life. If everything is a priority, nothing is. Mm-hmm. Protect your curriculum by guarding the non-negotiables. And for us, that's those 10 steps that we spoke about. Your plan is the absolute backbone of your vision. And don't let the noise of school life sort of bend it out of shape. Every new idea, every new scheme that's put your way, and every request, for us, it's got to pass the simple test. Does it strengthen what we've built, or does it dilute it? Because if it dilutes it, derails, or pulls staff away from their deep and meaningful practice, then the answer's no. You know, protect your curriculum fiercely. It's not just a document. It's a promise to the children that you're working with, and it absolutely deserves defending. So That would be a piece of advice number one. Second piece of advice, you know, always think 10%. I know there were people listening who achieve 90% GRD every year. And that is great. But what about that 10%? Mm. That same 10% who never reached GRD at your school or for similar reasons, what are you doing for them? Mm. You know, it's not a foregone conclusion that they can't reach GRD just because of low starting points. But, you know, living in poverty or being from a hard-to-reach family, last year all but one of our children made that jump.
Mm.
Your 10% are my 100.
Mm.
Plan for the most vulnerable and everybody succeeds. Your context does not define you. What we're doing early years really matters. What we teach matters, and how we teach it matters even more. Your curriculum, it's not a tick box of topics. It's a vessel, you know, it's a journey and a transformation throughout the year. And if it works for the most vulnerable, then it works for everybody.
Mm.
And I think that kind of leads to my final thoughts, really, just about curriculum development as a whole.
Mm.
People reduce curriculum to a document, you know, a formality and a requirement. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for me, that thinking's dangerous. Curriculum's not paperwork. It's a promise. And when you've made a promise to children, there's no room for complacency.
Mm.
You know, when they walk through your doors, their lives are placed in your hands, mm. their confidence and their identity and their future. And that's not a role for the careless or the comfortable or half committed. Your work needs to be done with rigour and integrity and unwavering intention.
Mm.
Because what we choose to teach and how we choose to teach it shapes who they believe that they can become. For me, and I, you know, speak a lot about it, and I am a real, you know, thing of the flag for UIFS, but we absolutely owe them children excellence and clarity, and we owe them the absolute best. Mm-hmm. So just commit relentlessly to what you're doing, not because it looks good on paper, but because someone's little life depends on it.
Yeah.
And that responsibility is not optional.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So honestly, thank you so much for joining me. I loved hearing you speak at the event, and it's been great. Obviously, we've talked outside of this session, but also to hear the journey, but to hear your passion, to hear your knowledge and your deep understanding, but also the huge, huge commitment that you have got to your role, to your team, but to your children and families is absolutely palpable. And I feel sure that, you know, as I say, we're not saying to everybody, this is how you do it and this is what you must do. We are kind of posing questions and encouraging people to think and reflect and those sorts of things. So it has been really, really great to chat with you. You've had so much to kind of share. And I know you kind of like, well, this is what we do. But honestly, it's been really powerful. So thank you so much for joining me. And yeah, I look forward to hearing how it continues and how it continues to work for your children. And I know you kind of obviously will put your school website in the link, because I know there's lots on the website. And I know as well, people do come and visit the school and those sorts of things. So they can absolutely kind of get in touch and kind of engage with you in that way. You might be inundated. We never know. You might regret saying that. But we'll pop that all in the link for the podcast. But for now, thank you so much and have a good rest of the day.
Amazing. Thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I hope you found it a valuable listen and that you've taken some things away to reflect on, or maybe things that you want to discuss with your colleagues. Of course, remember, if you want to talk about any of the issues that we've explored today, or you need support with other matters in your school, then do feel free to drop me an email. Sarah@earlyexcellence.com, or why not get connected with me on LinkedIn or Twitter. Anyway, take care and join me next time for some more genuine head-to-head conversation.